This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. There are many factors that can lead to homelessness, from mental illness to personal crisis. The local service agency Shelter House says almost 8,000 Cincinnatians, including children, are homeless. Here to discuss homelessness from an academic and research perspective, our assistant professor at the College of Allied Health Services School of Social Work, James Canfield, and associate professor of nursing in the University of Cincinnati College of Nursing, Rebecca Lee. Later in the show, we'll hear about local efforts to help families that are facing homelessness. You can join us at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Rebecca and James, thank you both for being here this afternoon.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us.
Rebecca, let's start by defining what homelessness is and who are the homeless.
Okay, that's a very good question that I think a lot of Americans don't really think about. We hear about the homeless and think about this generic category. However, one of the things I share with my students and other individuals is that there are unique subcategories or groups that experience homelessness, and that there are various definitions of homelessness. Different governmental agencies have definitions. That in itself is problematic, determining who receives services. But we have homeless individuals, and that might be comprised of men or women. We hear a lot about veterans, homeless veterans. Then we have families, which is the largest growing subpopulation of individuals, groups of individuals experiencing homelessness. You also have unaccompanied youth who are sometimes referred to as throwaway or runaways. A large portion of these might be LGBTQ youth, so they're fleeing. They come out to their families, and then suddenly they have no home to live in. Some families have a difficult time adjusting to a child revealing that information to them. And so you have that unique subgroup. And so each of the groups has unique needs and vulnerabilities, but they also have strengths. And so that's what we have to look at as a society and put a face on these people instead of using labels that kind of dehumanize and let us sit in judgment, say, of, you know, people who don't have homes to live in.
Yeah, I think oftentimes when we think of homelessness, we think of this literal experience of homelessness. We often think of, you know, the quote-unquote bum that's sleeping on cardboard, or the dude with the sliver of cardboard asking for change, or some bag lady, like some homeless Sisyphus forever pushing, like, a cart. But really, homelessness is more of an experience. So there's lots of different aspects of homelessness. And as Dr. Lee had said, you know, you have kids, you have adults, you have families, you have lots of different sorts of experiences that are out there, rather than just people that are staying in a shelter or on a park bench or things like that. Like, for example, right now, I've always been joking because the weather's turned to, quote unquote, real cold now. So you have a lot of families that understand, like, we have to make a decision. Are we going to pay rent, or are we going to pay heat? And then so they have their kids live with grandma for the winter, because grandma has a space heater or grandma has a little bit of heat. And that actually technically is homelessness. So homelessness isn't necessarily the literal without a home. It's more about a transient experience where you are lacking shelter. You are, as the government would say, lacking a fixed, regular, and adequate nighttime residence.
What are the challenges as far as you always read statistics? There are so many million homeless in the United States. And those are always estimates, right, Rebecca?
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. What are the does it come down to the fact that there's just so many different groups, it's difficult to actually get a handle on how many homeless are actually in the U.S.? Is that part of it?
Well, it's as James referred to, homelessness is a transient experience. And so really we get our numbers from, they call them point-in-time estimates. So the U.S. government picks a date, typically in January, and they have people go out and they go under bridges, they go to shelters, all the places that people usually go to be homeless. And that's how they generate these counts. So they assume, you know, it's January, it's cold, so people are going to be seeking shelter. However, that's missing all of the people, as James referred to. You have people who live doubled up. That refers to staying with someone, friends or family, and you're living with them not because you want to. You're living with them because you have nowhere else to be. So we don't really get counts on those people. One mother that in my research that I came across within a year time period had lived with 11 different family and friends until she finally had nowhere else to go, and that's when she came to the family shelter.
So these numbers that we give are actually underestimates then? I mean,
definitely underestimates.
They only typically capture people that are actually seeking services. So a lot of homelessness is kind of this invisible struggle. Like I said, we often think of the people that we see. So like you're on your way to a Reds game and people are asking for change, we think of those people. But the vast majority of those experiencing homelessness are often invisible to our perceptions and to those counts.
Have we looked at where homelessness occurs the most? Because I think most people have the impression this is an urban problem.
I think that once again, statistics can mislead us. It's easier to get counts in urban areas. There are more resources concentrated in urban areas. However, poverty is very much a rural epidemic. Recently, we've had statistics talking about increased incidence of newborns in rural areas that are being born addicted to heroin. So we have people hurting in both areas. It's just with the availability and the concentrated resources in urban areas, then we use those statistics that are gathered to draw our conclusions. And that's how you can miss people.
How much of an impact, you mentioned heroin, babies born addicted to it, which is just tragic. How much of an impact is the heroin crisis having on the homeless situation? Has there been research done into that?
There's constantly research looking at, say, causes of homelessness, and it's very hard to tease apart what comes first. And people usually living in poverty, at risk, so fragilely housed populations, when life's really rough and maybe you don't have adequate coping resources, that's when people might turn to substances such as heroin, alcohol. I personally don't believe anyone wakes up one day and says, I think it would be great to be addicted to heroin. It's usually a choice because they have these difficult circumstances. The problem is families, individuals living in poverty, they don't have a cushion. And so they're barely holding everything together, their housing, everything else. And so then if substances such as heroin come in, then that's just one more risk factor that can push them over the edge.
Again, 513-419-7100 if you'd like to join the conversation. You can also email talk@wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. Rebecca, tell us about the research that you've done, because you've actually gotten really, really close to the homeless situation, haven't you?
Yes, I have. I first experienced working with homeless populations during my when I was in nursing school, and so was really drawn to the strength of people who are experiencing homelessness. I saw a woman who had been in a food pantry. She'd been homeless. She was waiting to see a physician. She hadn't eaten for days, and so she had some groceries that she'd gotten. And a gentleman next to her expressed that he was hungry, and she shared instantly. There was no thinking about, I might need this for myself. And I thought, that's a lesson we could all take, not just at this time of year. And so my dissertation research, I sought to do an ethnography, so looking at the cultural experience of homelessness. And so I lived in a family shelter with a group of black and white Appalachian mothers. I'm an Appalachian mother myself, and I wanted to really explore what culture, how that influences the experience of being homeless. Appalachians, one of our core values is pride. And I thought, I've been a single mom with four sons, and how you have to swallow your pride to ask for help. So I wanted to explore that. And so I lived with these mothers and heard their stories about what led to them becoming homeless, how they didn't want to be defined by that experience. As one mother who had been living in her car, pregnant with her third child for quite a long period of time, said to me, "We're not homeless. We just don't have a house to put our home into." And I think, you know, how wise is that? And that was, you know, just, I had so much wisdom that these mothers shared with me.
Well, you talk about strengths. You've mentioned this several times. What are some of the other strengths that you've noticed in the homeless population?
Well, very much they watch out for one another. They are willing to share. You know, and once again, it's different subgroups. I've done some work with homeless youth, and they have that, you know, we had a conversation driving over here today, since James is blessed with youth, that and the rest of us in the car aren't, that, you know, they have that resilience and that spirit that they haven't been jaded by age, that some of us can be. And homeless families, the mothers that I lived with, as they said, they could have given their children up and been on their own and maybe had an easier time, but they fought to keep their families together and do what they had to do to survive. And these mothers were just, and some fathers were in the family shelter. So it's not just mothers there. But that spirit of, at the end of the day, they clung to their family, which is, once again, something that's important for Appalachians, but I think all of us, clinging to our family in difficult times. And then just, you know, I think, once again, just the ability to really appreciate the small things in life, because they have so little. Everything's been stripped away. So it helps you focus on what you do have.
You know what's important.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
We will continue our conversation. You can join us at 513-419-7100, or you can email us, talk@wvxu.org. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Joining us to discuss homelessness from an academic and research perspective, our assistant professor at the College of Allied Health Sciences School of Social Work, James Canfield, and associate professor of nursing in the University of Cincinnati College of Nursing, Rebecca Lee. And you can join us at 513-419-7100, email talk@wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And James, now your research, you're looking more at processes, right? It's a more process-oriented approach.
Process and evaluation,
okay.
Yeah.
So into things such as what, access to healthcare and just living, yeah, in general, right?
Yeah, living in general. Like, I'm working on my second book right now, and what I've been doing is going around the country hanging out with homeless youth, homeless families, street youth. So what we're actually seeing, what's interesting, just hanging around street youth around the country, is there's a lot of ubiquity in the differences that we see. It's these kids are growing up, they're developing, and that doesn't change no matter where you are, but there are lots of other factors that impact how these kids navigate growing up, whether that's how they navigate going to healthcare, whether it's how they navigate going to school. You see a lot of it's very interesting because you see a lot of differences around different in various locales, but you see a lot of the sameness. These kids are growing up with the specter of homelessness kind of following them. So, you know, I was hanging out in Portland with some of the street youth, and what's very interesting is that none of them had a stable family their entire lives, whether it was abusive, whether it was physically abusive, sexually abusive, neglectful, but they all extolled the virtues of family. They were all saying, "We're a family out here and we stick together." And that's something that you see. So when you come back to the Midwest, you hear that a lot, but you hear that in a different context. You hear that in the context of, this is our family. So as Rebecca had said, you know, we have a home, we just don't have a house to put it in. So you're seeing these same concepts get tied in around the country, just in different ways.
So when it comes to navigating the healthcare system for the homeless, James, what are the challenges they face there? What's your research shown on that?
Well, you know, what's interesting with the research that we did, so I just did a cool little research project with this organization, Upspring in Cincinnati, serves homeless kids, great organization. And what we did is we gave kids cameras and we asked them to take pictures of what happens when you get sick. And what do you do when you get sick? And they came back and we did a nice little focus group with them. We found these interesting themes. And what we see, what one of the biggest challenges is that when it comes to healthcare, there's really only two sorts of ways that that homeless kids conceptualize it. It's either the chicken soup, so I'm at home with chicken soup, or I'm inpatient. So there's no preventative, there's nothing in between. It's either chicken soup or inpatient care. And that's just how they're viewing it. So a lot of homeless kids have this very flippant view of death, if you will. And I use flippant intentionally because they're just around it so much. A lot of these kids all know death. A lot of these kids know these very serious injuries because there's, like I said, it's chicken soup or it's inpatient. There's nothing in between. So either you catch it at the chicken soup stage or it gets to the inpatient stage.
So when it comes to the research that's being done, how's all this research going to help deal with the homeless situation? Where do you see it headed, Rebecca?
Well, I think one of the things is in area hospitals, people who have been homeless, typically in the past, these populations, as well as low-income individuals, they don't tend to receive health care as quickly. They don't receive health care of the same quality oftentimes. And so when they're seen, say, in our hospitals, say at University Health, UC Health, they're coming in with a more advanced stage of their disease. Mm-hmm. So say, for instance, they're diagnosed with diabetes. They're not equipped, we're not helping them have the skills to manage that disease. And with diabetes, you can live with diabetes and manage it. However, when you hear about amputations, loss of eyesight, kidney failure, those are ramifications of not managing the disease. And so typically, populations who in poverty, homeless populations, they haven't been empowered to, as James was talking about, proactively promote their health. Mm-hmm. It's been reactive. I'm going to wait until things are so bad I can't ignore it. Or the life squad's going to pick me up and take me to the hospital. So I'm embarking on some research with some homeless individuals where I'm going to actually sit down with them and say, talk to me about what you do to promote health. When you're sick, how do you manage that? But how do you take care of yourself? What do you do? Because often our ability to manage our own health is tied to resources. Mm-hmm. We're lucky in Cincinnati. Once again, I'm not sure everyone knows about this, but we have a wonderful health care for the homeless program, the McMicken Integrative Care Clinic. Mm-hmm. And we have world-class physicians from the University of Cincinnati Family Medicine Department, Dr. Joe Kiesler, Dr. Nancy Elder.
He's pretty cool, isn't he?
Yes, yes. Dr. Joe's
cool. Students are great. Yeah. Just a little shout out.
Yeah, and Dr. Nancy Elder, and then there's Dr. Bob Donovan and other providers. And so we have that right here in Cincinnati. And mm-hmm. so when James talked about different areas of the country don't have access to the same resources, that's so important that we realize we do have resources here in Cincinnati. We have Cincinnati Health Network, which is a nonprofit that oversees all of the homeless and HIV/AIDS services in Cincinnati. We've won national recognition for these programs, and these programs are really held together through grants, through donations. And so people who are homeless do have places to go for health care. But then often, you have veterans who are homeless. We have a VA right here. But sometimes people, you base your future actions on your past experiences.
Absolutely.
So if you have a negative health care experience, if someone reacts to you and thinks that, you're making something up or you're drug
Absolutely.
Seeking, then you're going to take that with you.
So I also do work with homeless victims of trafficking with Cincinnati Union Bethel. And, the stories that they tell us as we're doing our research. And, so one lady says, I go in and it's because I'm pretty sure I have pneumonia. I'm pretty sure I want an antibiotic. And she wrote, "Why are you here? An antibiotic. I need an antibiotic. I need an antibiotic." And the first thing the doctor or the nurse, I can't remember which, goes, "I'm not going to give you any pain meds," because this person was a heroin user. And she's sitting there going, "I didn't say a word about pain. I intentionally did not use the word pain. I need an antibiotic."
They made the assumption.
They made the assumption. And she's like, "I know I've burned people in the past, but I didn't even write pain. And then, so that's just incredibly deflating. And then what we see what will happen is that the doctor or the nurse or whomever will give these charges to folks about, like, this is what you need to do. And they don't feel comfortable oftentimes saying, well, this is cool. I know I need to eat this, but I live in a homeless shelter. So don't really know how to get this. And then we just leave it there.
Or I go to a soup kitchen, which, once again, wonderful resources in our community, but they're very much dependent on donations. And typically, if you look at food pantries, we like to comfort people with food.
Yeah.
So we're not going to donate top healthy stuff. We're going to donate
Absolutely.
Macaroni and cheese.
For kids, it's yes. even worse because yes. everybody wants to give kids candy. And I try to tell people, I've never met a homeless child, and I do a lot of research, primary research of homeless children. I've never met a child that didn't have candy. Like, they know it. Like, I've had children that have never had ice cream, but candy, everybody gets candy. So it's very interesting because the donation's like, hey, here's a ton of candy, here's a ton of chocolate. But it's like, no, these kids are growing up. They don't really need chocolate. You know, broccoli's good.
Go ahead though, Rebecca, as far as the donations to the food pantries. And
well, I think, you know, it's people are well-intentioned, and especially,
Absolutely.
You know, I look at this time of year and I wish we could have Christmas all year round. That spirit that people feel the need to share with each other what we have.
Mm-hmm.
What's the saying? Live simply so that others may simply live. And I wish that we would more adapt that spirit. I grew up in Appalachia, very, very poor. And my dad was a country preacher, one of his three jobs. And I can remember going to church sometimes hungry. And the church people didn't have money, but what they would do for us was called a pounding. So everyone would bring food items and put in paper bags lining the front pews of the church. Mm-hmm. And so as a child, I learned that through others' generosity, I filled my stomach up. Mm-hmm. And so I think that, you know, I wish we could do more of that, and not just this time of year. And Cincinnati is a place, we have so many organizations that really do tremendous work. You have St. Vincent de Paul Ministries. I work with a group of faculty and students from UC. We run an interprofessional clinic in the Bank Street St. Vincent de Paul facility, a health clinic every Saturday morning. And people come there. They can come to that pantry. They can come upstairs and we can see them, make referrals for services. And the beautiful thing that I think people don't realize, when individuals come, it's a free choice food pantry. So I've had students before escort individuals through the food pantry, and they're allowed to select a certain number of each item. And students have talked with me one time, a gentleman who was allowed to get three cans of vegetables. And he turned to them and said, you know what, it's just me. I can make do with two so that there's some left for someone else. You know, that's a spirit that you see in, once again, people who really have very little walking amidst us, amongst us.
So, Rebecca, how much of the research is aimed at boosting the support services and the resources that are available?
Well, I think certainly as researchers, James and I have the ability to disseminate our findings. And, of course, in academia, that means publishing in journals, academic peer-reviewed journals. But I think it's also important, and why we're so appreciative of you having us here, mm-hmm. is getting out that message, because not everyone is going to pick up an academic journal and read it. Perhaps if
dare I say
if you're very, very bored.
Not even the researchers themselves?
No, we have. We
no comment.
But
no, we have to. But absolutely, it's true. A lot of our knowledge on homelessness is really anecdotal in nature, unfortunately. And while anecdotes are good, it doesn't always give us the clearest and biggest picture. Take children, for example. The literature on homeless children is actually only 30 years old, roughly 30 years old, really 1987. That's when you see the first sets of articles come out. So the first sets of articles were all about just describing the issue, shelter conditions, those type of things. The second were to compare homeless kids to non-homeless but impoverished kids. And when they did all of this, they found that there was no consistency in the literature because, as we talked about earlier, there's just so many different factors and so many differences across locales. And so now we're starting to look in kind of this person-centered, this client-centered, this subject-centered sorts of research. So it also depends on what type of field you're in. I know I do a lot of evaluation research, so I evaluate programs and I say, is this program working? Is this program not working? What's going on with that? But it really varies in terms of the literature. And then when you talk about books, there's very few books out there on homelessness that aren't either a memoir or something along those lines.
Well, Rebecca and James, thank you both for joining us this afternoon.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thanks for having us.
Assistant professor at the College of Allied Health Sciences School of Social Work, James Canfield, and associate professor of nursing in the University of Cincinnati College of Nursing, Rebecca Lee. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU.